like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All righty. And ye may begin whenever you wish.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and may it please the court. This is Victoria Johnson for the Commonwealth. This court should affirm, or pardon me, should reverse the circuit court's order suppressing the evidence in this case because there was both probable cause and exigent circumstances to justify the warrantless arrest here.
Oh, and Ms. Johnson, I don't mean to interrupt, but Haley, do I understand that the Commonwealth is no longer claiming the arrest was within the curtilage?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that I have a lot to argue on that because of the standard review of the curtilage issue. I just don't have a lot to do there. I can't say that the trial court's judgment was without evidence wrong.
My question is simply, does the Commonwealth still maintain it was within the curtilage?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that we are constrained to say that the trial court did not err on the curtilage issue. I think I'm constrained by the record on that and by the Collins case.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson.
Yes, Your Honor. And so I think that what we're left with here is whether there was probable cause and exigent circumstances that would justify the arrest. And I think that there were. I submit to the court. First of all, as to probable cause, there's certainly probable cause for the eluding charge. The defendant made a burnout in a parking lot that was observed by an officer. The officer, you know, when the defendant pulled out from the parking lot, the officer pursued him and continued to pursue him until his supervisor determined that the pursuit was too dangerous. During that pursuit, the defendant reached speeds of 72 miles an hour in a 35 mile per hour zone, turned around at one point and went in the wrong direction, went opposite to traffic, almost struck a police cruiser that was operating its lights and sirens, and ran through some red lights across the double yellow line. So I think that's pretty strong PC for an eluding charge. Yes.
Ms. Johnson, this is Judge Gumbo. Let me ask you, let's assume that you're correct on the probable cause issue and you've conceded the curtilage issue. Then really what we're talking about is whether exigent circumstances are present and whether the trial court was incorrect in its determination. Would that be fair to say?
That is exactly right, Your Honor. That's the nub of this issue. And those same facts that I kind of reviewed just now also support the exigency argument.
Well, tell me about that. Tell me how the fact that you've related to probable cause actually support exigency in this situation where the gentleman is walking towards the police.
Certainly, Your Honor. And I think that kind of the keystone, the touchstone for all Fourth Amendment analysis is reasonableness under the circumstances. And there's a lot of case law that talks about how we judge that reasonableness objectively, kind of in the circumstances that existed at the time. Here, this defendant had shown a willingness to flee from law enforcement, even when doing so caused danger to himself, to others, and to the officers, you know, to the general public and to officers.
But Ms. Johnson, he wasn't fleeing at the time that the officer confronted him in the driveway, was he?
No, he was not. However, I think that the record would support a conclusion that the officer could reasonably believe that that was a danger that existed or could exist.
Ms. Johnson, the facts of this case, in terms of the video evidence that was a part of the record, the appellee is shirtless, shoeless, and walking towards the police.
Mm-hmm.
Does that support the flight in this instance at this time? I mean, in the past, we certainly have it. But, I mean, what is your basis for it, just to follow up on what Judge Decker was asking?
Certainly. And I understand the court's concern. I think that the fact that the officer didn't know at the time that the defendant would not hop on his motorcycle and attempt to flee is something that the court could consider.
Ms. Johnson, is there case law that permits a court to use prior behavior to establish current exigent circumstances?
I think I don't have a case off the top of my head. I think that actually this court's decision in Collins v. Virginia, which rested on the exigency analysis, is somewhat supportive of that, because the exigency analysis wasn't overruled.
That's correct, but you'd have to say that implicitly it probably was overruled because it's actually been sent back to the Supreme Court for its determination on the exigency. So is that really a basis of analysis we can rely? Even if we were going to say it's correct, could we actually rely on that legally?
I don't think that you could rely on the case itself, but I think that the reasoning is helpful. There, this court looked at a number of other factors, including the fact that the motorcycle had been used recently in two eluding incidents before the day that the officer entered the driveway and looked at the motorcycle and identified it being at the home. So I think that that's actually something that you can look at. And also, this was all happened in about a 30-minute window of time, which seems like a pretty good break in some ways. But in another way, the officers didn't know what situation they were walking into. They didn't know if the defendant would continue to resist and elude. And again, the defendant had just really about half an hour before had been willing to drive that motorcycle in a very reckless manner in order to get away from the police. Another thing that we can look at, kind of harkening back to that discussion of the motorcycle, is that motorcycles are pretty mobile. They're more mobile than cars. And
this is Judge Malvo again, but isn't the police officer in the video standing next to the motorcycle?
He is. That's correct.
How does that impact your argument, though, that you just made about sort of the portability of motorcycles?
I think that the officers are allowed to look at the potential danger to themselves when determining an exigency at that moment. And there is, of course, a possibility that the officers could have diffused a situation that was potentially dangerous that could have led to...
Well, Ms. Johnson, he didn't have a gun or a knife or something that he would wield at the officers. You're just suggesting that he might have jumped onto the motorcycle and driven off or turned around and hit them with the motorcycle. Is that your thought?
I think it's more likely that he would flee because he had shown a likelihood to do that at the time that he was initially, the officers were initially after him. And it's easy to look in hindsight and see things that the officers could have done, but I respectfully submit that that's not exactly the analysis here. Instead, the analysis is what kind of practical decisions the officers made and whether that decision was at that moment reasonable. And I submit that the officers had a reasonable basis to believe that this could be a dangerous situation, and that was enough to give them an exigency justifying the warrantless arrest in this case.
Ms. Johnson, let me ask you this question. Did the trial judge rule on exigent circumstances? Did the trial court make a determination?
He did. And I have it here in my notes. Bear with me. I believe at Appendix 42 and 51, the court referred to exigent circumstances in its letter opinion and determined that there were none.
Ms. Johnson, this is Judge Haley. You're exactly right about your transcript citations. But did the judge ever rule exigent circumstances do not exist? Did he ever address that question?
My
he acknowledges the existence of that exception, mm-hmm. but did he ever rule on it?
Well, Your Honor, my reading of the letter opinion was that he indeed had ruled upon exigency. Maybe it's a bit more implicit than I thought it was, because plainly had the court found exigency, that would have turned to a different result. I know that the court was very concerned with the curtilage issue here.
Isn't that exactly what the Supreme Court did in Collins v. Virginia? The Supreme Court said, "We the curtilage issue, we resolve it, and we're remanding it to find out their exact exigent circumstances."
Yes, that is exactly what the court did in Collins v. Virginia, and perhaps that would be an appropriate disposition in this case as well. My reading of the opinion letter, and I'm quickly looking at it again, Your Honor, as I said, my reading was that the court had rejected exigency, but had they not, then that is certainly something that the court would need to determine after finding that. Pardon me, I'm trying to read and talk at the same time, and that's not going to work well for me.
Supreme Court of the United States didn't do that.
Well, that's true. They found that it was the curtilage, and then they remanded back down to the Supreme Court of Virginia for further findings to determine whether there was an exigency or some other justification. And the Supreme Court of Virginia just heard that argument last week. So
I understand that, but didn't this trial court judge, all you have to say is, and I find the circumstances were not exigent.
And I thought that the court had done that, Your Honor. Perhaps I'm mistaken, but
I
it
think
is
you
my.
Are.
Well, in that case, I'm quite embarrassed, Your Honor. And to the extent that the court did not make that finding, then I submit that the case should be remanded for making that finding. I submit that the Commonwealth's assignment of error would be broad enough to cover that relief as well, because plainly, just being an arrest taking place on curtilage standing alone, it is not enough to justify the suppression of evidence. I think that the court would also have to find that an absence of probable cause and exigent circumstances.
Well, I believe if you read the appellee's brief, I believe he says, and I shall ask him, I believe he says that the issue of probable cause was never raised in our pleadings in the court below or in our argument.
I believe that the issue of probable cause was raised. And if the court can bear with me just briefly, I will take a look at the probable cause argument in the Commonwealth's brief. I think that I have it.
I don't doubt the Commonwealth made the argument.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question. My phone cut out.
I don't doubt that the Commonwealth made the argument in the court below. But, and I'm looking at.
I'm sorry, Judge Haley, is the court's concern that the Commonwealth failed to make a probable cause argument below or that the trial court failed to rule upon it?
No, ma'am, I'm not concerned about that. I'm wondering whether or not the issue of probable cause was ever raised in the court below.
Ms. Johnson, I'm going to let you answer Judge Haley's question and.
Sure.
Into your rebuttal time. I'll give you an extra minute, okay?
Oh, I appreciate that, Your Honor. I was not watching my time closely
at
all.
No, I am. That's part of what I got to do. Go ahead and answer the question.
Well, thank you very much. I believe that, and I apologize, I don't have this right on my fingertips here. The Commonwealth argued at Appendix 35 that the officer had sufficient probable cause to place the defendant under arrest for a felony eluding, and the defendant argued... Let's see. That the warrant arrest occurred in the curtilage. So it looks like the defendant's argument relied on the curtilage analysis in his motion to suppress, but then in the Commonwealth's answer, part of the Commonwealth's answer to the motion to suppress was that there was probable cause and exigent circumstances to justify the warrantless arrest, even if it was on the curtilage. Is my reading of the record.
Ms. Johnson, you're well into your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will reserve what little time I have left. Thank you, Your Honor.
Oh, certainly. Mr. Webb?
Yes, ma'am.
I think, sir, we'll hear from you.
Thank you very much. Well, Judges, Frank Webb on behalf of Mr. Carroll, and if it please the court, I think it was Judge Haley, you were correct to note that the Commonwealth failed to brief on the curtilage issue, and I would submit to the court that that issue is waived, and that the court's ruling on the curtilage issue stands as law of this case. If I may address now the exigency question.
If I may point to page 8 of your brief, as I said, at no point in raising the issues relevant to his motion to suppress, has Carroll argued that the police failed to have probable cause to arrest him?
That's correct, Your Honor. I did not raise the issue of probable cause or litigate that question because... Yes, Your Honor, I think it's fair to say that there was, and more to the point, the police believe that there was.
All right. And so that narrows our issue.
Well, very good, Judge. If I may, there was probable cause to arrest Mr. Carroll after they were able to identify him after reviewing their investigation.
Yes, sir.
And they went to go arrest him with probable cause, but they needed a warrant to arrest him on the curtilage of his land.
But the Commonwealth has conceded the curtilage issue.
Correct.
And I think you've conceded the probable cause issue. And so we're left, the issue is, were there exigent circumstances or not?
Well, Judge, if I may, let me address that question.
Yeah.
So as to the question of exigency, I think the court is correct to note today whether or not the judge had to address that in its opinion letter. And I can tell the court that the court here in Fairfax gave it very little consideration because there's no evidence in the record to support the exigency question.
Did the trial court ever say in its ruling, anywhere in this long opinion, I find there are no exigent circumstances?
Well, if Your Honor will bear with me just a moment, I believe there was a sentence where the judge ruled that they arrested him in the absence of any exigency. So it's just sort of a comma and then without any exigency, which they clearly would have needed in order to arrest him, with probable cause, but without a warrant.
Well, Mr. Webb, I know exactly where you're talking about in the letter opinion. It's in the conclusion. But
yes,
my question that bootstraps onto Judge Haley's is, if a trial court is really going to rule on exigency, whether exigency did or didn't exist, aren't there some factual determinations that the trial judge has to make in connection with that?
I think you're correct, Judge.
Okay, and he
did not, Your Honor, because that really wasn't the response that the Commonwealth made to our motion. The Commonwealth argued, in essence, that the arrest was articulated, was effectuated in public view, or was the product of hot pursuit.
Well, but if it's hot pursuit, it requires some sort of exigent circumstances or a warrant at some point. I mean, in other words, it's difficult for an appellate court reviewing a opinion of a trial court where the trial court just essentially makes a conclusory legal point without having actually addressed it in terms of the facts behind that, that decision.
Well, that's correct, Judge. And that's actually why I argued in my response that this particular issue was not preserved. Because the in oral argument and at the response in its motion, the Commonwealth never applied any analysis to whether there existed any exigency at all. And in cross examination of the officer, I was there to ask, was there any evidence of any violence, any contraband, any weapons, the whole laundry list of possible exigencies, and the answer to every single one of those questions was no.
Mr. Webb, though, in terms of the Commonwealth not presenting any argument about exigency, that's not quite correct, because didn't it, in its motion, responding to the motion to suppress, indicate that exigent circumstances were a factor?
I think it's difficult for me to say that the answer to that question is yes, because there's a clause to a sentence that says even if this court does not find this exigent circumstance for a warrantless arrest, and that comes after the sentence saying that this case is similar to the Santana case that was cited, that the officers were in hot pursuit after a high speed chase. So I believe the Commonwealth's response was conflating hot pursuit as an exigent circumstance, and then relying on the combination of that and the arrest happening in a public place as being sufficient justification to arrest without a warrant.
Well, then you're saying the Commonwealth did raise exigent circumstances in its opposition to your motion to suppress.
Well, Judge, I haven't seen any authority cited by the Commonwealth which indicates that hot pursuit is a subset of exigent circumstances, or it's, because my recollection on this issue, Judge, is that hot pursuit is itself an exception to the warrant requirement separate and apart from exigent circumstances. The cases that deal with exigent circumstances all talk with the necessity of preserving evidence that the police fear might be destroyed, whether it's marked bills or narcotics.
Mr. Webb, in terms of the Velez standards, they also talk about flight, though. And while hot pursuit is, you're correct, it's sort of a separate subset of it, aren't there analogous positions that the court could take as it relates to hot pursuit and flight?
I think that might be true, but there's nothing to support that in this record. As I apologize, I don't recall if it was Judge Malvo or Judge Decker, when you were asking the Commonwealth about this issue, when the police arrived at Mr. Carroll's home and he exited and stood on his curtilage, he was barefoot in his pajama pants with no shirt on, and the officers were flanking him with three officers there standing between him and his bike. At the time they effectuated the arrest, he was not fleeing, and they had more than, 30 minutes ago called off their chase.
Well, again, I'm back to this question. Did the trial court analyze or address the issue of exigent circumstances or making any finding with respect to their existence or non-existence?
Judge Haley, I would submit that the court did not. And the court did not because there was nothing to support nothing to support that conclusion one way or the other. There was nothing to support exigent circumstances, and the Commonwealth did not, at oral argument, stress exigent circumstances.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. As I've noted in my brief, there was nothing in the record to suggest that there were exigent circumstances here. There was no evidence or any allegation that Mr. Carroll was armed, that he committed any crimes of violence, that he had any contraband, and that he was, in essence, a danger to anyone when they arrived on scene. He was manifestly not a danger to anybody, and he was not going anywhere.
Mr. Webb, what about the Commonwealth's position that the prior eluding and the behavior and the manner in which he eluded just a half hour to 40 minutes earlier was sufficient to suggest that he would potentially take flight again?
Well, I think if if the officers had arrived at any location, but his driveway, the curtilage of his driveway, and he was still mounted on the motorcycle, I think the Commonwealth's argument would carry water. But when they arrive, they're knocking on the door. He's not anywhere near his motorcycle, and he comes around to the side where they have him well flanked, and he cannot be a flight risk. He cannot be a continuing eluding risk.
He lied to the officers about who was driving the motorcycle, didn't he?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that's an issue at this appeal.
Well, it might be an issue if that's indicia of a further attempt to escape.
Well, Judge Haley, when Mr. Carroll exited his home, he was not at risk of an escape. He was surrounded by three armed officers in his bare feet.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Judge. I'm not sure what else I need to touch on, judges. Does the court have any other further questions for me?
Judge Haley, did you have any additional questions?
No, thank you.
Judge Decker?
Mr. Webb, just one more about your...
Yes, ma'am.
So your position would be that the trial judge did make a determination that there were no exigent circumstances implicitly in his conclusion in the letter opinion.
That's correct, Judge. If this court agrees with the Commonwealth that issue was preserved, my position would be that he implicitly... rejected any inference that there was exigent circumstances. And under this standard of review, his fact-finding here is to be deferred to. I'll note that the officers didn't believe that they had exigent circumstances. In the video that's made a part of this appendix, there were two discs. I'll point the court to the disc labeled Carroll 2. Between minute 130 and 138, one of the officers can be overheard saying, if he doesn't come, something to the effect, if he doesn't come out or if he doesn't answer the door, we'll go get warrants for him.
Well, Mr. Webb, you just said that in his fact-finding, the court found there were no exigent circumstances. And I ask again, where did the court find that as a fact?
Well, Your Honor, I think I believe it was Judge Malvo who identified the two places in the letter opinion, or it might have been Ms.
Yeah.
Johnson. I don't believe the judge gave it a lot of time in his analysis because it really wasn't developed in the evidence by the Commonwealth attorney below.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. If the court has no further questions, I rest on the sound discretion of the trial court in its factual findings on the curtilage issue and its rejection of the of any exigency, because there's really none in the record to support that. On brief, the Commonwealth argued that there could have been an inference of intoxication in him riding his motorcycle, but there's nothing to support that in any of the testimony by the officers. And I don't believe that they're entitled to make that factual inference now on appeal.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Webb.
Thank you.
Ms. Johnson, I'm going to give you your minute.
Thank you. I'll be exceedingly brief. I'll point the court to the Varez case, the Virginia Supreme Court case that I discussed on brief, which discusses some of the factors that are relevant to the exigency analysis. And the Varez court did point out that there's no final and comprehensive list of all exigent circumstances which might justify a warrantless entry, because police officers are faced with changing circumstances and quickly developing facts all the time. But in the interest of speed, I will note that some of the factors are whether there's a clear showing of probable cause, whether the officers believe there is a likelihood of escape if the suspects are not swiftly apprehended, as in needing to go to the house quickly. quickly and get them, and the suspect's recent entry into the premises and the belief that the suspect is located at the location. Also, I took the opportunity to review the letter opinion. And I agree with, and I apologize, I didn't pick up on this. I agree with Judge Haley. It doesn't appear that there was an explicit finding on the exigency issue. And I submit that this case should probably be remanded back down to the circuit court for that finding. And this court should kind of follow the lead of the United States Supreme Court on that issue.
Ms. Johnson, your time is concluded, but Judge Haley, did you have any additional questions, or Judge Decker?
I have none, thank you.
And Decker? I had one. Ms. Johnson, you know, under the Verez line of reasoning, how do you square Mr. Webb's point about one of the officers saying, well, if he doesn't come out, we'll just get a warrant?
I think that's pretty consistent with Verez, because one of the Verez factors is whether the defendant is likely to be at home. And if they find that he is not at home, then I think that would be the next logical thing, is to go get a warrant. You know, we think that there's a danger. We think he's going to get away because he already got away once. We need to run and get him before he flees and causes a danger to anyone else. But if we can't run and get him, then the next thing to do is to go get a warrant.
All right, Ms. Johnson, thank you very much for your answer and your argument. Counsel, thank you both. Have a good afternoon, and your case is submitted now to the court.